It's Tuesday night or Wednesday afternoon when you're listening to this, and you know what that means. It's live from the Five Hall Faxes from UncleDale.com's weekly podcast. I am Sam Fells, former editor and writer on said website, now of Deadspin.com. You can find me on Twitter at FellsGate. As always, we are in fatal four-way formation with the usual crew, so I'm joined once again by Dr. Viral. He is the biggest jackass, no talent in the business, no offense. Andrew Cieslak.
Can you get to that? We're just naming songs off Maggot Brain. That's what we're doing today.
Let me know if you can get to that. You can find him on Twitter at Torque Penderloin. He is our technical supervisor and our supervising technician, and he's working the ones and twos, and he is the current editor and writer of Faxes from Uncle Dale. I always seem to leave that off, but he is Matt McClure.
Eh, don't worry about it.
I'm not going to worry about it too much. It's no longer my problem after 12 years. You can find him on Twitter at Matt_McClure_. Last but not least, he is the Oracle of Humboldt Park and the Goal Line Assassin, Fifth Feather John.
Happy to be here, gang.
We're happy to have you, John. You can find him on Twitter at Fifth Feather. I guess we're going to start with the beloved tonight. Today, when you're listening to this, and to let you in behind the curtain a little bit, on Monday morning, there was a bit of a Justin Fields discussion, and we are starting to take sides a little bit here.
There are factions being formed.
There are factions. Mm-hmm. Slack and I are on one side, John is on one the other side, and Matt just wants to watch the world burn, as usual. So I will set this up by saying that I don't watch college football. I never saw Justin Fields play in college. So what I was projecting is kind of a myth. I was going by what I'd been told by coworkers, by what I'd read, by highlights I'd seen, yada, yada, yada. And John is on the side that it's 100% the coach's fault, that the system doesn't work, the players around him suck. And no one could be successful in this. And I don't know that I necessarily disagree with that, but where Slack and I sit, it's about 97% the coach's fault. Where I wish I just saw or have seen a few more flash plays, just a little more plays that made me stand up off the couch. I see a little inaccuracy, just a little more often than I thought I would. Some locking in on receivers. Now, John, you can sell this because I don't know if folks know this, but John puts Lee Corso and Pete Futak and Kirk Herbstreit to shame with the amount of college film he breaks down.
Stop yourself. Stop yourself.
So, John, explain to me why I shouldn't put any of this on Justin Fields himself.
You know, you throw the hard questions at me right away, Sam.
I do.
You don't even let me ease into it.
We got to dive right in, John. We're getting old, and there's no time for foreplay anymore. Let's just get right to it.
No, I think, you know, it's I've seen it. I've seen enough through the season. You haven't seen the flash plays. I have seen the flash plays. I don't know what your definition of a flash play is,
but
buddy.
We're watching the same game.
But I've seen the flash plays. So I disagree in that I haven't seen.
Perhaps your threshold for flash plays is lower than mine.
Indeed. I don't know what exactly you're looking for, but I think that for me, I've seen enough through this season. The thing that really bums me out, because I was thinking about it after you made that proclamation on Monday morning. That was your proclamation. That's where you stand.
Theses.
Mm-hmm. The thing that really bummed me out is when you start looking at young quarterbacks around the league, guys who are established as, you know, the Russell Wilsons, the Tom Brady's, the like that upper echelon, the Aaron Rodgers, you know, all of those guys had the same coach for the first however many years of their life to get of their career to get settled in.
Right.
And you're looking at Justin Fields now, and what bums me out is that Nagy's gone, right? Like, everybody's in agreement. Like,
we certainly think so.
I mean,
but
him coming out of the halftime saying, this is fun. Like, oh my God. You know that that's just a guy who knows he's fired.
That's so not even the best part, but we'll get to that later.
So to me, that's what concerns me the most is that when you start looking around at guys who become established, it's very, off the top of my head, and I've thought about this over the last couple of days, I can't think of one guy who's like the established QB that had a coach switch after his first season.
Would that be mitigated if they get the next guy right?
It'd have to be very right.
I mean, but, it's going to have to be, yes.
But I'm saying that if history is any lesson, it doesn't seem like it happens very often. And that's what concerns me, dude.
Was Tony Dungy Peyton Manning's coach from day one?
No, but he had Jim Mora for the first few years, I think.
Wasn't there a Marcia Broda in there?
No, Marcia Broda was, I think.
No, this is getting to be a long time ago, so maybe.
Maybe Marcia Broda was, maybe Peyton Manning is the last guy. Maybe it was Marcia Broda his rookie year, and then they brought in Mora, and then Dungy after year three or four.
I'm sure we can find examples, but your point is correct that all these quarterbacks have bedded in to a pretty stable situation one way or the other. Now, Aaron Rodgers' coach was a moron,
indeed,
but he was there.
Indeed.
John, some of this, and we'll turn it over to Slag and Matt when I'm done with yet another fucking soliloquy. Some of this is just my hope and I guess what I've projected onto Fields, because every time we see him, like on Monday, on Sunday night, lock in on a receiver, throw an interception, or miss an open guy, or not pick up a blitz, it's like, well, this is just what rookie quarterbacks do. And I guess I'd let myself believe with everything I'd heard and read and had seen briefly, he was going to be above that. Not that he would come in and immediately rock everyone's world every game, but that these mistakes wouldn't quite be as often as we've seen them. And that doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be great. I've seen certainly a lot. I'm still excited to watch him play. Even though having him play now is probably damaging, I just want him to play so I can watch him play. But I sort of had let myself believe that he would be above the normal arc.
But it's three quarters worth of a season, though, and he's getting bad and dumb coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And, whatever the example was earlier in the year, my eyes aren't supposed to go there. Well, why aren't they? And that's a question for the coaches to ask. And also, I don't know how many fucking guys he needs to hit in the numbers or the hands.
Well, it is true that, he's getting no help with blocking because they won't help the offensive line. He's got a bunch of guys.
His clock is all fucked up. He's trying to throw with bad. He had no velocity on any of those throws. And normally you can at least, that was always a thing about him was his arm strength, even from, off platform, and it's just not there because it's the ribs. It's your core. And that's where some of the stuff sailed on him.
Yeah. And he's throwing to a completely pedestrian receiving crew that can't get any separation. The one guy he's supposed to have
and
has
they're running
quit.
Dumb ass routes on top of it.
Everyone's running a hook. Everyone's running a stop route for 7 yards. There's a lot of factors into it. But we did see him work with all that against Pittsburgh, and it just never leapt up from there. They had the bye week, and it's like, all right, here we go. This is what it will look like.
Matt Nagy with an extra week to plan, though.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know what the definitive answer is here. I've been waiting for Slack. I can't imagine what he's going to say now.
Oh, I mean, I'm with you in that I'm worried that there's something that mentally has rotted in his brain by just putting on the helmet so that
you put on the
if any butterfly flaps its wings for 10 seconds longer and he's on any other team, we're just saying, oh my God, can you believe this? I would genuinely, genuinely love to see if him and Mac Jones switch spots, what that would look like, both statistically and aesthetically. I just want to know.
I was thinking about this today because I saw one of the Bears blogs tweeting that maybe it was even Herb, I guess, and they were sort of on my thing, and they wanted to see the Bears hire someone for their second job, and Josh McDaniels' name was there, and I'm like, I can't think of a guy more likely to walk in here and decide to eject Justin Fields from the scene. Like, there's a guy who, like, doesn't want to deal with all the things Justin Fields can do and would decide, no, I need a quarterback who just who's a game manager. That's what I need.
I don't scary. Truthfully, I don't want another offensive genius here. Like, after
seeing I'll take this, Leftwich.
I would prefer someone a little bit more adaptable and pragmatic. I don't need some dogmatic system.
Right. No, I agree with you there, man. I will take an offensive guy, but who walks in there and you're like, all right, what do I have to work with? Here's what we're going to run. Not here's what I run and everyone's going to fit in it no matter how bad it works. See, the problem is, John, you still have Mitch scars because he was here his rookie year, then got a new coach and it all went to shit. Now, I don't know what, honestly, if everything went perfectly, what Mitch's ceiling is. But if that second coach had been like, all right, here's what he can do and here's what he can't do, and we're just going to focus a system that accentuates that.
While we've got the defense,
probably works better. They hired this guy as the second coach who only had the parameters that he wanted.
Again, the ceiling. I think the ceiling for Mitch, the thing that everyone says, it like is he could be a Tannehill reclamation project in that vein. And there are games that Ryan Tannehill only throws 12 passes because they've got a generational running back, which is obviously a huge caveat in the scenario.
It's a fine way to win.
The most frustrating thing about the whole thing, Sam, is that in the first year, Nagy looked like the guy that understood how he could win with Mitch. And
yeah,
then all of a sudden,
sure,
year two, it was like, well, we're not going to do any of that anymore. We're going to do it the way I want to do it because this is what I was hired to do. And then things kind of fell off the rails from there.
It fell off the rails by the Rams game. Like, from there on
if
out.
If we actually go back and review it, the last quarter, maybe even more of that season, it had already been found out.
Mm-hmm. To me, the most, if we're just looking short term, the most damning thing that came out of that Sunday night game, outside of the obvious ones that have already been mentioned, but Olin mentioned it on the post game, was that Jason Peters goes down on what, like the
third play?
First series of the game, and you bring in a guy who's been out the whole year, who you didn't trust to take any snaps in the game in the week before, other than special teams, two snaps, and then you run the exact same game plan with him at left tackle.
On an island.
As you would have, exactly.
No help.
You left him there one-on-one with their star defensive end, just let it... That's it. We can't adapt. This
not
is the
even,
plan that we put in place. We
not
have
even
nothing
allowing,
else to do.
Not even allowing for the fact, you know what? He might get a little tired.
Right.
Like, he's like, boy, he hasn't played an actual game in over a year. Let's just have him run every snap.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the Nagy era in a nutshell. They plan for the game in their head, not for the one that's happening
that's
on the
field.
Field.
To me, it's the same kind of thing that came out this afternoon, which is when they asked him, well, you had Jalen Johnson on Devontae Adams all first half. What did they do that got him loose in the second half? And he's like, oh, they didn't do it. They did the same thing in the second half. They did the first half. Then they asked Jalen Johnson. He's like, well, no, they put him in the slot. They were running these crossing routes. They did these big. He's like, everything changed. So, like, Nagy's player is like coming out and saying, well, I don't know what he's watching, but this is what I saw, and I'm on the field covering the guy.
Yeah, Jalen Johnson has no time for his head coach.
No, he does not.
He's not a Nagy guy, I will tell you that.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he should be.
No.
But that to me was as close to the bathroom speech moment that we'll get with Matt Nagy, because that's just like, dude, it's right there. We're all watching it. Like, we see him lining up in the slot. We see him in the backfield. We see these crossing routes to get away from Jalen Johnson. And you're just like, nope, everything's the same. I mean, is he even trying anymore?
Isn't that a Sean Desai problem, though?
Well, and what film are they watching?
Right.
I mean, it's Tuesday at this point.
It is a Sean Desai problem, Matt, but like, Nagy takes responsibility for all of it. He's the head
right,
coach.
Right. Right, and by Tuesday he should know what happened.
Right,
because if you're a football coach, all you do is you watch film, and so You know what happened on every play. Yeah. Yeah, right. Those are the two qualifications, or at least two of them. So, yeah, for him to not be able to articulate what happened, or not articulate, but just say something that completely didn't happen.
We're being gaslit.
Yeah. I'm not seeing what I'm seeing.
It's completely unbelievable. I mean, the Nagy era will be remembered fondly in these parts.
It's hard to think of an era that started so promisingly.
Yeah, like, I don't think I even cared about the John Fox era from day one. Like, this right. one I cared about you, for at least
you
2
knew
years.
It was going to be bad from Jump Street with right. John Fox. And Mark Trestman, yeah, they had the great offense, but you could tell from day one the defense had just thrown in the towel. This one, like, we were talking about the goddamn Super Bowl. And then it just poof. I mean, it's hard for me to think of any era anywhere that started out without a huge amount of roster change. Like, okay, you could say Craig Hartsburg with the Hawks because they went to the conference final, right? His first year, but that team got old and dismantled.
No. They lost in the first round or second round his first year.
Oh, that was Colorado?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
All right. But that team, like, considered itself a contender.
Mm-hmm.
And then they traded Roenick and the whole thing went to shit. But, like, that roster was dismantled from underneath them. I can't. It's hard to think of another team that, like, had people thinking they were going all the way and then ended with this and really not a huge amount of time.
Dusty, maybe, with the Cubs?
Yeah, that's a good one. But that roster changed a lot under him.
Yeah. If we're sticking strictly in town.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's what we do here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess that I don't know that I tried to ignore that whole Thibodeau Bulls era.
But no one ever really thought they were gonna win. Anyone who thought that Bulls
did,
but they're morons.
Not really.
But they were deranged.
Yeah,
yeah. And Thibodeau, of course, had both of Derrick Rose's knees go kablooey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, Khalil Mack got hurt, I guess, but like the top row of this team has kind of been the same.
Well, and he was the guy that was brought in here because he was the offensive guru.
Right.
He was the top candidate during that offseason. So
I don't know about that. He was kind of an outside shot. I remember listening to the score. I forget who it was. Someone said, like, you know, Matt Nagy is a name you should keep an eye out for. It might be a year too early, but, you know, it seems like he's got head coaching chops as far as, you know, his rapport with players and stuff like that. It seems like he's a rising name, but not necessarily one of the main guys. Yeah. So, and wasn't that another McDaniels offseason? Was that the year that he told Indy to
Colts.
Told
Indy
to fuck
Indy off? Down the river.
I think because of what happened in Denver and because of what he did to Indianapolis, and I think it's pretty clear too that the McCaskies like to employ people that will go to church with them and be demure and polite. I am dead serious.
He's not kidding.
I'm dead serious about this.
It's still funny.
That's probably
the mental
why,
image
that's
is funny,
why Bruce Arians didn't get this job.
Because
he told them to go fuck themselves.
No, I think Josh McDaniels, I don't know that he's going to get a job on any other team.
He's just going to wait for Belichick to die because Belichick's going full like Logan Roy on this shit. Like he's not going to, you're going to have to like actually, you know, poison him in order to, before he writes you out of the will, before, you know, he actually gives that up willingly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. Well, I suppose we got to talk about this rumor that floated that we were talking about that they might actually be thinking about hiring a president of football in Trace Armstrong.
Football.
I mean, again, this is another thing they had to
Trace
deny.
Trace is Spanish for three.
yes, it is. It's like, thank you very much. I don't know if Trace Armstrong knows his ass from the hole in the ground, and I'm not going to know whoever they hire for this does either, but
we do know he probably has traumatic brain damage.
Wasn't he some sort of squeaky wheel agent or player union malcontent?
He was both. Yeah. He's an agent now. He was in the running to be union president when DeMaurice Smith was elected.
Or executive director. I think the president is technically an actor.
Was he on Dan Pompey's list of guys?
I have no idea. I don't pay for that.
I think this was a national. Again, all the reports have been national. They get
right. John, you're the one who comments on how the beat writers have no idea what's going on.
No, they don't.
That's the joke about Dan Pompey's list of guys. Is it's dumb and bad like him.
But like, is there any hope that, like, they recognize that they might need to like organizationally restructure? You draw anything from that? Does that help you at all?
Nobody's got any ounce of hope in this anything here, Sam. I don't think.
Then why bother?
Oh no! Wait. Trace Armstrong was number one on Dan Pompey's list of people to consider for the role.
There you go.
He already said there's no truth to it. Like, he himself said that, literally.
No, he said, I haven't talked to them.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I get it.
But there could be an intermediary who is right.
A non-denial denial.
Mm-hmm. Well, if Tony Dungy is the next rumored guy, that's number two on the list. Then you know the Bears are just going right down Dan Pompey's list.
Would you put it past them?
Oh,
I'm on. And by the way, I'm on record. Fuck Tony Dungy.
Yeah,
like on a personal level, bad guy.
I mean, I just see this scenario where they actually do get a president of football operations, put Sweaty Teddy on the Crane Kenny path.
Well, Sweaty Teddy's got some work to do out in Action Heights. So
right. And then the guy hires his GM. But by the time they get this all done, all the coaching candidates are snapped up. And they got to wait for someone like John Fox who gets fired.
That's why it's scary for them to be doing a full rebuild at the top, because they're going to miss out. And they're going to fuck it up. If they have to hire the top guy who then hires all his guys by the time done.
Well, no, like, the clock starts ticking after... like
week 15 or 16.
Week 16. Like, that's the 2-week window that you can start. If they announce that, like, they don't necessarily have anything, like, if they don't come right out and say that who the next guy is, but they at least say, like, you know, in order to comply with the new rules, we have informed both Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy that they will not be returning for next year.
Ryan Pace still hiding, by the way?
Fucking hub to defending, right? Like, if you look at the fifth round draft picks and whatever, like, bitch, you haven't won a playoff game in 8 years.
Bitch? That's 11 years, isn't it?
No, seven or eight now with Pace at the helm.
But he hasn't won a playoff game. As a team, they haven't won one
since
11.
The 2010, since the NFC Championship game here against the goddamn Packers.
Indeed. Of course, Hub would defend Ryan Pace. But, like, I mean, it's stupid to compare them to any other organization in town. But, like, even Stan Bowman, who hates the press and hates talking and is bad at it, would have come up for air at some point with all these rumors flying around. You can't find Ryan Pace with a search party.
Well, you can. He just gets
He has a show or something, doesn't he? He gets on the radio.
He gets on state media, yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't fucking count.
Well, and he sits in the booth with his obnoxiously large wedding band, always just like biting his thumb, watching, you know, his eyes alternating back and forth between the field and whatever monitor he's got in there.
He's the fucking, only four more of these to go.
He's the Chad Cop meme.
You know what I need to get back to is that it's only changed in the past year or two, is that as soon as the Bears' 16th game is over, I put it down. I don't care. You can put the Bears away in the closet because I'm not going to know who they draft. I don't break down tape like John.
Not my job.
Not my job. Whoever they sign in free agency, unless it's a huge name, I don't know. So you just put him down. You just, you know, call me in August when the first preseason game is and John's sitting there with his charts ready to break it all down.
A tradition unlike any other.
A tradition unlike any other. That's what we need to get back to here.
Man, I hope we don't listen back to that episode because you guys are going to feel pretty bad.
Which one?
This year.
Oh, a lot of that is tongue-in-cheek, Andrew, and you know that.
Okay.
No, I really thought it would be better. Like,
here's me taking this exercise seriously. Come on.
No, I mean, I always try to be as optimistic as possible.
True. Because we have so little.
He is right. He is Johnny Kool-Aid after all.
Right. And it's fun to be optimistic in August.
But yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, this, we always know that it can go pear-shaped at any moment.
And it did.
For the, right. We just don't want
many
it.
Many moments, in fact. Many yeah. pear-shaped moments.
That's my favorite Misfits song.
There you go.
All right.
All right.
Should we turn to more uplifting categories? Because we don't have any.
Yeah. It's bad. It's bad all
so, around. So, turning to the West Side Hockey Club, I don't even have a segue for this, but we don't have that many games to discuss. I thought they played okay in Montreal. They actually probably weren't even that bad in Toronto. They're just outgunned and starting Kevin Lankinen. But as I want to do, I was looking up some numbers today, and Matt likes to send me these numbers as well. Since Derek King took over as coach, the Hawks are playing at a
quote unquote.
The Hawks are playing at a 98-point pace. Did you know that, John and Slack?
I did not know that.
I kind of had a feeling the record's been pretty good overall.
9-6.
They keep trading wins and losses. So, I mean, I asked the question last week, I think, if they started the season with Derek King, they'd probably be in the playoff position.
Well, you're beating me to the punch here, Slack.
All right, sorry. You're stealing my content, Sam.
If you look at some metrics, they've actually been a plus defensive team. And they've gotten good goaltending. So, John, being the expert that you are, based on what you've seen in these 15 games, and you've certainly watched all of them.
Every second.
If they had started – here's what I would say about Derek King. I think he's in our binary moron, non-moron. I think he's right in the middle. Like, he's just kind of there. But he doesn't take away, and I don't know that he adds much. If they had started with the season with a coach who was simply zero on the number line, not taking away, not adding anything, do you think this is what they are? Do you think they're a 98-point team?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Well, if we're staying strictly from the start of the season, you go back and look at some of those games that they lost early in the year, and the vast majority of them, they mailed it in from the second face-off of the game.
Right.
Yeah, they were what we like to call in the old country non-competitive.
Mm-hmm. They were usually down three by that second face-off.
That not interested sign was hanging up and waving proudly before every game. So the fact, yes, I absolutely believe if they had somebody that they did not despise and want gone out of their lives
and was having them run stuff that made sense from all the hockey that they had played in the, you know, the preceding 25 years of their lives,
then yes, no question, I believe that they would be on the same pace that they're on now.
It would still kind of be not very entertaining to watch, but like
this is how you do this.
I would have rather watched and be unentertaining than the first 9 games or whatever the fuck it was, whatever that was. It was
11, not, I believe.
It was not professional hockey, like at all. So anyway,
it was barely any kind of hockey. That wasn't even pocket hockey.
My point is now for a team that has for a month, it's not, you know, it's a decent stretch, not maybe totally representative, but they have
almost 20% of the season.
They have played at a playoff pace, and yet the feeling I get from the people who really care is still very morose, very down. Now, is that a product of they're just so far behind the eight ball that it doesn't matter what pace they play at now because they can't make up the ground and they can't? Or is it because, yeah, it's not terribly fun to watch?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think when you look at we've done so many of these episodes now, and Sam, you made it crystal clear the one time if you're looking big picture as to how you build around this team, there's so many hard questions to ask and no easy answers and you're looking at a team now that's still 10-15-2. So
bad.
At least as loath as I am to say it, like, it's not Norris caliber, but you can at least rely. You have been able at least to rely on Amy's oldest in a number one role. Yeah, like legitimately. Yeah. Maybe not $10 million worth. Again, not Norris trophy caliber.
Well, the $10 million is another discussion. That's not right. On him.
And that's something you want to tie yourself to 9 years with. But
he's that's what it is.
But yeah, but he's given you 27 legitimate minutes a night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's playing well ever since they brought Derek in.
It's the goddamnedest thing.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
Well, let's play this out. Let's say they play at this pace the rest of the season. Now, that won't get them to the playoffs, because even if they play at a 98-point
but
pace...
But will they be pesky by the end of the year, Sam?
Right. They could be the spoiler again. You know, if they play...
Especially if they launch Flower, too. I mean, that's all up to him. But, like, that changes the calculus dramatically at the end of the
year. It does. But let's save that. Shelve that. You play at a 98-point pace for 5 out of the 6 months of the year. What would that tell the young go-getter in the GM's office about what this team is?
It tells you that it's going to tell you one way or another, you need more offense, and whether it, like, and you cannot keep relying on Kirby Dock and
bums.
Jonathan bums, players that you thought were not going to be bums, specifically Kirby Dock. Jonathan Toews, you didn't know what you were going to get given his health and given his age and the odometer. So you can't, like, again, he could be a defensive center for the next year, and then he's Toews is probably done, you would think.
He's not gonna leave $10 million on the table.
I would not.
So he might be. I don't know. He scored the past 2 games, Matt. Possible revival.
Could I mean there's got to be some kind of percentage bounce back from carrying the big bagel for 25 games. So
I actually would say that I have liked Kirby Dock's game the past few.
Yeah, but who gives a shit?
Well, this is the problem. This is our concern, dude. But I feel like there's going to be a bit of a spurt somewhere around here of goals and assists. I don't know how much. It's not going to be an avalanche. It's not going to be enough to make you think everything's okay.
It's not going to be enough to even justify, like, anything over a four Mildo bridge. Like, you can't give him the Jack Hughes 8x8.
Oh, God, no. Who would even consider such a thing?
I mean, they've pinned a lot on the fucking Gomer with the Errol Flynn facial hair, so.
That's nice, but you can't go into contract negotiations with press clippings.
I mean, his agent might.
He's more than welcome to try.
It's still kind of amazing how much your draft position can kind of guarantee you, just because you're like, well, I can't give up on this guy because we drafted
him. He's the number three pick.
Right.
Well, he gave up on Dylan Strome pretty quickly.
Strome, yeah.
I mean, okay, I'm not saying it's never happened, but you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I bitch about the amount of bums they have with your Reese Johnsons, your Mike Hardmans that I'm tired of watching.
Well, they're gone. They're both gone now.
Right.
My guy has
now.
Returned.
But your guy is here, and I feel like Lucas Reichel is not too far behind.
Inshallah.
Now that he's back from the dead, the land of wind and ghosts. But yeah, I can bitch about that, but we talked about this last week. The main crux is their number one and number two centers have 6 goals.
That's not enough.
In the old country.
In any country. It might be enough in the third-tier Swedish league, though.
We don't have to make that joke anymore, though.
It's still fun occasionally.
It's still fun.
It's still good enough for the Spengler Cup, baby.
I finally figured out what it is, I think. I'm not sure. But that's where he's coaching, yes?
Yes, as an assistant.
It's like the USA baseball team in the preliminary round of the Olympic qualifying. It's like, right. That's the caliber of player.
Well,
that's not a bad analogy, actually. I also saw that they're not going to allow Reichel to go to the World Juniors. They're learning.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
They're learning.
Hopefully he'll be here by then.
You would hope.
The unpaid boy labor tournament.
Well, Kirby got to go. That was the last guy. He did not make it.
And it may have ruined his career.
Let's just say not around anymore.
John, anything else on your bursting yellow pad?
Nope, you got it.
I got it. That's it.
Well, since we didn't segue before, speaking of the Olympics, it looks like that's all going to shit, huh? How about that whole deal?
If you were to place a bet, and none of us here are betting people, of course.
Never.
I don't think that's going to happen, which is a disappointment for John, because he's got his Team USA roster chalk whiteboard working every day. He's dropping names. He's adding names.
He's after the fact putting Dennis Savard on the 87 Canada Cup. So
right, he's basically Billy Beane in that scene with the magnets, you know, and the nameplates, just tossing names up on the board so they stick.
But even
I'm staked out outside of Team USA headquarters right now in Colorado.
You and you're calling Bill Guerin, you're throwing things at Bill Guerin.
If Bill Guerin can even hear you through his cirrhosis swollen ears.
Which he can't. But yeah, that's not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen. I don't know why we're the only people who say this, but Olympic hockey is not fun.
I wrote this 8 years ago, the last time that they went, and I caught an avalanche of shit.
Written it, and I've caught an avalanche of shit. Like, people think, like, oh, it's great. It's like, you're going to stay up till 2:30 to 4 in the morning to watch Team Canada trap their way to another gold medal?
Think about how hockey coaches generally operate, and then put that to a single elimination tournament, and then give them more space to push shooters to the outside. It's going to be bad.
I mean, John, you're our historian, our archivist. Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Let's remove the two U.S.-Canada games from 2010. Name one, and we'll throw out the one from 2004 as well. Name one good Olympic hockey game that you remember. You're like, wow, that was a lot of fun to watch.
Belarus making Tommy Sello cry.
Is Belarus? Okay. Belarus is the one I remember.
Do you think they have this tournament for Belarus?
No.
No, the 2002 games when USA beat Russia. That was good. I remember that one.
I don't remember that one at all.
Watching that at Station in Champaign.
Classic.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say it like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Station.
That's the bar I went to on 9/11.
I think that tells you everything you need to know right there.
That's what caused 9/11.
No, this was post 9/11.
So post 9/11.
Let's all get drunk because we think we're getting drafted tomorrow.
You are dead on. We had a friend actually lose his mud and break down and cry about that. It was incredible.
Simpler times. But yeah, Sam, you asked me for an Olympic game that I remember. That's one that I remember that I enjoyed watching.
So one out of how many professional tournaments have we seen? So there's been three, four,
the
five.
Ones with Hasek, the ones with Hasek were fun.
Those that were on at 3 in the morning.
That's
that
the
was
problem.
Nagano, yeah.
Yeah, 98.
The hotel room trashing, that's not a game.
But the best ones have always happened on North America because they play on a North America-sized rink. Whenever they play in Europe or Asia and they're playing on the Olympic sized rinks, that's when you really start to see just garbage hockey because it, like Matt was explaining, you just, coaches are just trapping their way through the medal round.
Great.
And it's not fun.
And sinking into the slot.
Right.
And saying, okay, you can shoot from 80 feet.
Mm-hmm.
The only national team that is consistently fun on the big sheet are the Finns, because they don't care. They're all nuts. So they're just flying into people. And it only gets them so far. They get themselves out of position against the more disciplined Russian, Canadian, and Swedish teams.
Well, I don't know if the Russians are ever disciplined, but yeah.
But the Finns are like, they'll generally give you the proverbial big finish when they're pushing in a third period in a game that they're mostly outclassed in.
No. Now, I wrote this, like, if they don't go, and I don't, my money is on they don't go, this is the perfect opportunity for them to resuscitate the World Cup, which is actually a watchable tournament on a North American sheet at a time when, like, you know, you're not used to seeing hockey, so it's kind of cool to have hockey in August and September. The players are rested. They've had time to practice together, but they've probably, like, fucked that thing over so bad, I don't know if they can ever bring it back.
I mean, they let it go for like 15 years without doing it. Like, they could do it again.
The 96 tournament is better than any Olympic tournament they've ever had.
That's the Amani Legend Maker.
Yeah, Amani Legend Maker. Yeah, winning that was, two that games was, in Montreal.
That was awesome. That was an awesome tournament. But right, I also
all
think,
three of those games are classics.
I think being younger for me is a big influence on how I watch those games, though, because like I cared a lot more back then. I just don't give a shit anymore. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You've seen too much at this point.
Yeah. Take it back.
So, well, all right. Do we have Cretan questions we need to get to?
We do.
All right. Unless you guys have closing thoughts before we do so, I don't want to step on anyone's toes.
No, I mean...
No thoughts.
No thoughts. All right. Fair enough.
All right. Let's see. Brian Yasudis, longtime guy. It's probably
longtime guy.
It's probably going to be mostly longtime guys at this point. Seeing as Sam is an old man who still gets the newspaper delivered, does anyone else have any other boomer tendencies? I pay for cable.
Yeah, I was going to say Matt and I are the our cable
last
boys.
Two cable.
We're wow. cable boys.
Well, see, here's the thing: is given my profession. And the fact that I've spent like what going on the last like 27 years on the computer, I don't need to, with everything so fragmented with streaming services, I have ways of completely legally obtaining anything I would want to watch that isn't just on cable. And I still like surfing, even if it's the guide. There's always a Guy's Grocery Games or an SVU on for me to just leaf through, and I don't like fucking with delayed sports.
That's fair. What was it you said to me?
I like new stuff. I don't think I have any boomer habits.
I still listen to the Beatles, so that counts.
Was it?
I mean, John and I listen to fucking sports talk radio too.
You're right.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Well, I listen to Jason. I listen to Jason's podcast, which is kind of like sports talk radio.
I smoke. Does that count?
So I don't know. I still go to shows. That might be considered an old person habit from before too long. Yes, I still get a newspaper delivered every morning.
Nice.
That is surprising.
Really?
I would not have expected that, Sam.
Yeah, it's how I grew up, and I just feel the urge to keep doing it.
Do you get them both or just
no,
just the Trib?
It was the Tribune for every day of my life, basically, except for when I wasn't here, until like just like a year and a half ago, and then I made the switch to the Sun-Times after the Tribune got a little too mergy and layoffy.
Are the back pages of the Bright One still fun?
Oh yeah.
That way, I mean, that was the thing too growing up, is like, just like, you know, a family was either like a Jewel family or a Dominic's family. You were either a Trib household or a Sun-Times household.
Yeah,
Daily Herald, my friend.
We were a Trib household, but now I am a Sun-Times household, and proud.
John, tell me
so.
You were a Daily Herald guy.
We absolutely were, Andrew.
My grandma in Oak Grove still is.
That's why he has such the affection for Tim Sassone.
Me and Mike Imram, old pals.
Oh yeah, we saw Mike Imram at the racetrack once during
of
the fireworks.
That's where you saw him.
Yeah, and my friend yelled at him, and he looked back all scared.
That's outstanding.
All right,
that's why I hate Barry Rosner, for the record.
Yeah, fair enough.
Comedian
Mike Imram still with us?
Yeah, he just retired.
Okay.
How about Alex Kazaberg? Is he still with us?
So that is an old running gag from Andy Dolan.
Hey, Rosner's a friend of the program. Yeah, I mean, you might not like him, but he was a big supporter of ours back in the day.
I'm happy for you.
Yes, he's a friend of yours, Sam. Don't
he's
ever
still
get
a friend
confused.
Of mine. Yes, he is.
He's a friend of Trent Yanni. That's all I know.
And Billy Gardner.
What's next on the hit parade?
The Corey Crawford Memorial Account, DeBrinket Haver, who is not necessarily a longtime guy, but I've seen him around.
He's
around. Top OG math rock and emo picks.
Math rock?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking, I mean, I don't know if the Dismemberment Plan from the late 90s would count as that, as math rock, but it's a little bit more experimental, like, and maybe depends on how OG he's talking, like a Q and not you, Manamana, those kind of things, or like even way before that, or like, is he talking like Rites of Spring emo, or like Juliana Theory, or American Football, or whatever, so.
I don't even know what language this is.
Slack knows what's up.
Yeah, well, I keep thinking of like Minus the Bear or Botch, if you want to go.
I liked Minus the Bear. I saw them over Soundgarden.
Yeah, Minus the Bear is great. I know McClure agrees with that.
Yes, they. Yeah, I've saw
that. Or like, then you could go like Battles or whatever. Some of that other. What's what's that other band? I can't think. I'll just go with Minus the Bear. That's my favorite.
All right, Milsavage. Why do they actually hate Strom? I think they just think that he's fucking downy soft.
From what I've heard, from what little I know of the inside, it's exactly what it is.
And he's not fast enough to make up for that.
No, he's not. What is he? He's the NHL version of Steve Multi, isn't he? If he's not one of your top two centers, he doesn't do any good. He doesn't do any good on a wing. They keep trying it.
Yeah, but Steve Multi was perpetually 46 years old. Right. And at least had like old man hockey ass.
You know,
they could just park in the slot.
I think they think Dylan Strome will get you a bunch of points that no one gives a shit about, and I don't know that that's wrong. But for a team that can't score, it is pretty criminal to not let him play, especially when Kirby Dach's not doing anything.
And again, a tradition unlike any other: press box to top center between two 40 goal scorers and on the top power play unit.
Yeah, just right. That shoot's never late. I feel like him and Mr. Borgstrom are the same thing. I guess you can't play both at the same time. So they want to see if Borgstrom's going to be anything more than Strome was.
He's already ouchy, and he's got illnesses that aren't COVID and whatever. So like, he doesn't seem to want to play very much.
The thing with the dearly departed Bowman was that he always thought he was getting something over on someone. Like, oh, we got Borgstrom. This guy is so skilled. They just couldn't see it. And it's like, well, look,
to
Panthers
be fair, there is a bit of a track record with the Euro scouting with that.
But he's not a Euro scout. He played at University of Denver. He was in the Panthers system. This isn't a guy they signed out of HC Davos.
So this is Swedish Drew LeBlanc is what you're saying.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, like, they always thought like, oh, we're pulling one over the Panthers. It's like, well, the Panthers have one of the best teams in the NHL on the ice. Are we really sure they don't know what this guy is? And you see, you know, they thought they were doing that with Dylan Strome. We could do this. They thought they were doing it with the Greek dinner, my pork, whatever his name is now, Nylander. Like, oh, we're pulling this guy to Buffalo. We see what they can't, and he couldn't play. Who knows if Kyle Davidson's going to be the same way, but they always thought
they were pulling. Who knows if Kyle Davidson even has the job past April?
Who knows? So, but hopefully there's a change in this idea that they know better because they're the Hawks. They didn't, and they don't. Moving on.
All right.
Don't push me.
He's Nikita Alexiev.
Thank you.
There it is.
Ted. Just Ted.
Our Ted?
Not our Ted.
Okay.
Jump ahead 5 years. Who is the most celebrated athlete in Chicago? Kirby Dach, Michael Kopech, or Nick Madrigal?
Oh my God.
I think it's, truthfully, I think it's Nick Madrigal by a fucking landslide.
It's Ed Howard.
What is that? What's celebrated? Like out of the three or?
Yes,
like,
out of those three, I think the metric I would go by is most jerseys.
No, Rogers. I'm gonna go Kopech here.
Kopech,
how many years?
Most,
in how many
Kopech
years?
Is,
five.
I think Kopech's most likely to end up on TMZ. Is that a category?
Yeah, but Sox fans will eat that shit up.
But like, if he's tightly wound enough that he's gonna like he could snap at any moment and be a never was.
He's got some school shooter vibes for me.
I feel like Kopech's floor is still a guy who comes in and throws 102 out of the pen for 20 pitches and developed, you know, and it still has the personality, still has the ponytail.
But the actual, like, the off-field meltdown is always looming. There's already been, and nothing against, I'm not even talking about, like, needing to step aside for whatever mental health reasons. I'm talking about, like, the shouting matches with the Degrassi fans and shit.
and all the other stuff. I'm with Matt that I think Madrigal will probably be the most beloved just because of how stupid fucking fans are, and they already love him, and he hasn't even played a game for the
team.
Do
they?
Yes, Sam.
I don't see your that
people.
At all.
Your people love him.
Check Normie Cubs Twitter, not Prospect Creepos Cubs Twitter. Although there's kind of an overlap there.
Most Cubs Twitter is just like, we already have this guy. His name's Nico Horner. You really think people are excited about Nick fucking Madrigal?
Nicky Two Strikes.
I think people are. Till his first 4-for-4 game with 4 singles against
and running himself into the out and mailing one into the fucking first base dugout.
Doesn't matter. People will absolutely go fucking bananas for him
with his completely normal and a totally human-looking running stride.
And I think that's even if Kopech has a respectable career. You know,
first of all, John, we all know Madrigal is going to be the DH after they sign Correa.
Oh, okay. Is that where you're at now, Sam?
Wow, that's where a lot of people are at. I'm not.
Oh yeah, because Marcus Stroman tweeted at him.
Right.
Yeah. These people don't.
No one seems to get it. Like, Marcus Stroman is just their like make good. Like, hey,
it's
see what we're seeing?
It's a red
herring. We're spending money. We want to win. Here's Marcus Stroman for 3 years.
And the Rain Dazzler basically like had the most like dog whistle, in like, you know, scouting report on Marcus Stroman imaginable when they made.
Let me ask the Cub fan first. Slack, in the 3 years that Marcus Stroman is here, will he sniff a playoff start?
No. I could see something making them good enough in 2023 to sniff a wild card.
Right.
I'm not ruling that out. So
okay. That's as close as I think they'll get.
Right. I mean that shit can happen if you're fluky and, you know, you've got,
and there are 14 playoff spots to chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as hard as it used to be to get a wild card spot. I mean, it's especially, you know, in the NL, I would say.
All right, one more, and then we'll end with a bang or whatever.
All right, we'll go non sports. We'll go with Burt Cronenberger, who I've seen it literally at every show I've been to in like the last month. So hi, good to see you again at Lawrence Arms again, Burke. Good bad weather driving albums. My new music listening proclivities expand when the sun is shining, but shit weather often just makes me want to listen to people bitch about the shitty Bears.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Chicago bad weather tradition is listening to Bears Monday, isn't it?
I feel like a good, like, when I think of bad, like, overcast, gloomy weather, I think of, like, minor key sort of stuff. So, like, I don't know, like, pretty much any Deftones album you won't go wrong with.
That. I feel like Secret Machines are a good gray, windy, snow or rain kind of weather.
PJ Harvey.
Lots of PJ Harvey would fit that bill.
Honestly, when it's cold out, the aforementioned Minus the Bear, Planet of Ice.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of synths for you there to give the sort of almost crystalline feeling of it all.
I mean, like the Pelican Russian Circles genre that we're all, well, except for John,
post-metal,
that feels more wintry than summery, even though we've seen them both in the summer.
Well, I mean, and Pelican literally has an album called The Fire in Our Throats Will Beckon the Thaw.
Right, so yeah, that's the way I'd go.
Or like, or even with minimal vocals, something like ISIS the band, not the, you know, political organization.
You know, I'm I don't know that anyone else feels this way, but Wu-Tang is a big winner album.
Again,
for me.
Minor key, minimalist. Like, that's the sort of thing I'm going for. Even
when I first started listening to Wu-Tang, it was like in high school on those nights when like you and your friends didn't really have anywhere to go, but you're stoned to the gills and you're just walking around in the winter with your hat, your wool hat, and your jacket pulled all the way up, and like, well, all anyone could see.
And
you listen to Wu-Tang.
All the videos from that, too, are like from them around Staten Island, Shaolin, with the big jackets and the big hats and everything. So it projected a wintry vibe also.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it from us this week. We will be back next week with a pre-Christmas something or other. I don't know what we'll do.
Ham?
Yes.
Okay.
An airing of grievances next week.
I got a lot of problems with all you people.
So thank you for listening and downloading. Please rate, review, and share. We are so appreciative for Slack, for John, for Matt. I am Sam. We will talk again next week. Until then, stay under the radar. Music is a setting.